Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by KidLitCon, an annual conference celebrating and connecting the people who work in KidLit. From bloggers and podcasters to writers and librarians, anyone with a passion for KidLit and an excitement to talk about it will find good company here. I'm attending this year's KidLitCon, which will be held Friday, October 9th and Saturday, October 10th at the Hyatt Place Harbor East in Baltimore, and I invite you to join me. Early bird registration has been extended until September 20th, but be sure to register soon, as spots are filling up fast. Visit kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon for more details. That's kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon. See you there! More books, more reviews, more friends. It's the best books ever, with special guests Julie Falatko and Carter Higgins, here on the Let's Get Busy podcast. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast and the best books ever. Julie, Carter, you're back. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
I have to tell you, I almost had to miss this because our power went out an hour or so ago, and it turned out it was a squirrel chewing on the electrical lines. And so, of course, we all went running down there because we thought maybe he had superpowers and we were going to bring a typewriter down to see if he'd make poems for us. But he was just dead. Then the power came back on about half an hour ago.
I was just a squirrel.
I like the nod to Casey Camillo, but just to end that he was just dead.
He was just dead. I know. We had high hopes. We all went running down there, but no.
Well, it's been a couple months since we've talked, and I had such a great time talking with you about what are the favorite books you've come across so far this year. And I got an opportunity to talk to Cynthia Alanese, my friend from Texas, sort of during that quarter two phase to talk about more books. And I know you've been reading for reviewing, for just reading with your kids, reading for fun. So I'm excited to jump in and talk about what good stuff you've seen that's out already, because I know that I've come across a ton of stuff that I can't stop talking about. It's crazy almost to think that we still have more publications coming out this year.
I know. They just keep coming. That's the stress of books.
Yeah, well, it's a good stress.
Yeah, that's true.
So why don't we start with you, Julie? What book do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about Leo, A Ghost Story by Mac Barnett and illustrated by Christian Robinson, which comes out today, the day that we're talking. I'm a huge Mac Barnett fan, but this was one of those books that when I first read it, I really had to sit down and absorb it for a bit because it felt like it was a book that I'd known for a long time. There was something very comforting and familiar about it. And I realized that it was so familiar because it really calls on these sort of retro books that I grew up with. It definitely, there's similarities to Crichter by Tommy Ungerer and by all of Sid Hoff stuff as far as the storytelling goes, by Gus the Friendly Ghost by Jane Thayer. And you can take those books and draw a direct line to Leo, a ghost story. And I think the thing about it is all those books are about characters that are your favorite people, but you just haven't met them yet. You already love them. And so it can tell you this story very directly, and you're already very invested in it and very involved because you know this character in your heart and you love him and you love the best friend that he ends up making, Jane, and you have to know what their story is. And I would have read it if it was just a story about a ghost boy who got kicked out of his house because the people who moved in didn't like ghosts and wandered around and met a girl. I would have just read that. But then there's an exciting part where a robber shows up, and then that makes it even better. That's and Christian Robinson's, Christian Robinson's illustrations, you know, we talked about Last Stop on Market Street last time we talked, and how that book also had a quality of having been around for a long time. And I think that a huge part of that is Christian Robinson's illustrations. He is just sublime as an illustrator, and what he does for illustrating a ghost is amazing.
I talked to Christian and Mac both separately for the podcast, and those actually, again, as we're recording, are posting today, Tuesday, and then on Friday. And it was really, it made a lot of sense, but it was really exceptional also to hear that Christian's whole approach to art is that he admires those artists from a time past. And he is, I don't want to say he's sort of trying to pay homage in his art, but he was talking about how when he creates art, he's always trying to put restrictions on the tools he has access to, the colors maybe that he has access to, or things like that. And in this case, the book is all washed in blue and it looks beautiful. But to see him limit himself, constrict himself, and in that way be able to perform in such an exceptional, masterful way is something that really left an impression on me, specifically with Leo. So yeah, I'm right there with you on this one.
You know what I think too about it is that it has really highs and really low emotions. And that's a lot to ask of a small book, which makes it a big book, really, right? And I listened, Matthew, to your conversation with Mac about this book. And I hope people will listen to that, because one of the things he said that I thought was so remarkable is how if a book is not telling a kid that these feelings you're having of like loneliness or fear or like that illustration of the family in the bathtub is just heartbreaking. And if a book is not saying, hey, these are okay things to feel, you might think that they're not. And that's really the victory of a book like this, I think.
Yeah, I like Julie too. Before we, Carter, we'll move on to you for your next book too. But Julie, you said something that I really like too, which is that however you worded it, that you just had to sort of sit with this book for a while. That was the same experience that I had, that after the first read, I read it and I liked it. And I liked it sort of just for the way that you like it, because it's great work. But then it followed me around and I was thinking about it more and I wanted to return to it and look deeper into it. And I think for the way that it's such an entrancing book in that way, or that it's drawing you in to explore those feelings. And as Carter, you were saying too, to know that these are feelings that are okay to have, and it's okay to be afraid. And it's also okay to feel like you're not wanted, or to have the very best intentions and to still feel like they're not good enough for other people. Those are all feelings that are created in this wonderful safe space that is Leo. So
I completely agree. And I think that Mac Barnett really needs to be lauded for his ability to write a story that's so straightforward, and you really get wrapped up in the story and it sort of takes you by the hand. But at no point are you thinking, oh, this is making me feel better about my fear or anything like that. The story completely envelops you. And then, like you said, I sat with it and I read it, and then I had to go back a couple of days later and read it again to think, why did this get under my skin so much?
I'm like laughing over here going like, I could just keep talking about this book for another 30 minutes. I'm going to cut myself off. And Carter, I'm going to spin it to you to ask about a book that you've really loved over the past couple months.
Yeah. So, it's back to school time, which is kind of a happy new year of sorts. And there's this book I really love called I Will Never Get a Star on Mrs. Benson's Blackboard. And it's by Jennifer K. Mann. She's the author and the illustrator, and it's published by Candlewick. And it's about a girl named Rose who, like the title says, will never get a star on Mrs. Benson's blackboard. She's not super great at math and her reading. She's not using a very loud voice, and she just wants to please her teacher. And I think that's such a real emotion that happens this time of year, maybe any time of year. But you really get a sense of this teacher's care for this girl. One of the things the girl Rose is worried about is that she's the kind of teacher that's going to dump messy desks on the floor. She's not super neat because she's an artist. And even if you're not an artist kind of kid, I think you would relate to this feeling of, am I good enough? And Mrs. Benson, she kind of reminds me of like a mashup of Miss Nelson and Miss Viola Swamp, the way she's like rendered. It's so like interesting looking. My favorite moment in this whole book, the kids are getting their desks checked for neatness. And of course, Rose, the artist, is really concerned about this. And the bell rings and Mrs. Benson doesn't have time to get to Rose. And she says, "Close call, huh, Rosie? I'll look at yours tomorrow." And it's the only time in the book that she calls Rose Rosie. And I think Mrs. Benson knows that Rose is a star, not in the typical way. So it's just a really great look at that relationship between kids and teachers. And the art is beautiful, and the writing is great. And I just loved it.
I haven't seen that. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah,
you won me over with the Viola Swamp Miss Nelson mashup. That sounds great.
She's like the best parts of both. And she's got a really great outfit on, which I might need to look for one.
There's your Halloween costume, Carter Higgins.
Yeah. All right, I've got a book that takes place in school as well and is about perhaps also about a troublesome relationship with teachers or with perception. And that is a new middle grade novel called George by Alex Gino. And we were sort of talking about this before we recorded that this is a book that I personally can't stop thinking about. And I think there's
stop thinking about it either. Yeah. I completely agree.
There's a lot of people out there too that are talking about it. And so I should just preface the story, or maybe book talk the story, by saying that George is a child going into fourth grade who has the anatomy of a boy, but who identifies as a girl. And being transgender, and coming into accepting that identity for George takes the form of wanting to play the lead role in the class's performance of Charlotte's Web. She wants to audition for Charlotte, and her best friend, she has this beautiful best friend that keeps encouraging her and says this is great and is accepting of her, but sort of the rest of the world doesn't understand or doesn't quite know how to handle it, or in this case, the teacher just says outright no. So to follow George through her journey of going through the process of this play and everything that follows of figuring out who she is and who she can be to her parent, to mom, to her brother, to her classmates, to her teachers, I thought it was beautifully handled. And I think that Alex does a wonderful job in portraying the transgender story, the transgender experience, for students in grades 3, 4, and 5. I think that this is perfect, absolutely perfect for that age level. I said right away that I wanted to do a book club with this book, that I'm excited to put it into parents' hands, that I feel like it's going to be a book that'll be challenged a lot, but for really great ways, because I think that we are all carrying a bunch of insecurities. And I think when I read this book, I saw myself in a lot of those characters that were making the wrong choices. And I thought, I have a lot of room to grow in this. And I thought about all of the potential Georges that I had in my school. And so in that way, I think it's a book that just struck an emotional chord with me. And I'm thankful to say that it's out in the world, that it's a story that exists and that hopefully children will see themselves in or see a different experience through.
Yeah, I think that I'm glad this book exists too. And I think when I was thinking about this book, I realized that this would be a book that when students read it, for so many of them, they would have their life pre-George and post-George, because just for what it is, either a child who is transgender, this may be the first book they read where they can identify that strongly with the character. And then when I was talking to my kids about it, they sort of knew what it meant, but I explained it in terms of the book very matter-of-factly, which is how the book presents it. And it was, and then they said, oh, okay. And they knew what it meant. And they haven't read it yet because I read it and then sent it to Carter. But
I'm on page 62.
But I think it'll be, you know, I don't know what this is. And then they read the book and then they do know what it is. And I think for this generation of kids who are now 8, 9, 10, that will be transforming of their lives, because then they'll know and they'll understand, and that will, it'll make the world a better place. There's just no question about it.
There are scenes in this book, much like in R.J. Palacio's Wonder, that are just scenes that I feel like, Julie, I experienced alongside George. That scene with the sign on the back of the bully's
that
back.
Scene more than any. And let me tell you, because that scene, I will say, involves vomit, and I am not a fan of reading about vomit. That's one of my pet peeves in books. Like, I'm one of those, like, sympathetic heavers, you know? So I don't like reading about throw up because it makes me feel ill, but that was a great scene. And I'm sorry if we just ruined everything for you, Carter.
No,
but
no,
for
it's
everybody.
Fine, can I say, as a reader who's only on page 62 of the story, and I haven't finished George's story, I don't know if she gets the part, I don't know what's going to happen. But so far, what I love about it is that it's unfolding like a friendship story. Mm-hmm. Kelly and George are just girls in fourth grade who are, you know, navigating life together. And so far for me, that is, that's something really great about it.
I feel like Alex answered almost almost every question I could have had about George in this story. And maybe that's why I respect it so much. George, you would know, Carter, by now on page 64, that George has a denim bag where she keeps these magazines of girls with makeup on and different, like, fashion magazines, right? And looks at those to perceive the way that she could be. And there's a scene where her brother finds that bag. Actually, her brother himself has a number of points throughout where he's sort of joking with George as if he's coming of age with her. And sort of saying like, hey, you know, oh, I see you're looking at pictures of the ladies, right? You're doing all this, I know. And there's sort of this joke about masturbation and joke about growing hair, you know, losing your voice. There's like jokes about sort of all of that. But knowing the transformation that George is going through is something unlike what her brother had gone through, I think that it just brings up this really wonderful opportunity to consider that our experiences, while many, many people have gone through them, that does not make them universally applicable to every person on this earth.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, well, that's what every great book should do, is make the experiences of the characters make you sympathize and feel yourself as to understand the character, but also realize that they are probably having a much different experience than you are. And I think it was not an easy equation for Alex Gino to take all these elements of how do I get this story across and sort of answer all the questions somebody might have, but not make it like a list of things, to make it and to stage it as a friendship story. It's very well done.
Yeah, they did a good job. I'll look forward to the way it plays out and the way it connects with children. Julie, let's go back to you. What's another book you've been talking about?
Okay, I have another back to school book, since we're talking about school books. Dory and the Real True Friend by Abby Hanlon, which is the second Dory book. The first one is Dory Phantasmagoria, which I adore.
I love that book.
And do you adore it?
I adore it. And when I read Dory Phantasmagoria to my kids and they just were like howling with laughter, and then I was nervous about Dory and the Real True Friend, but I even like it better, I think. It's Dory, who has a very strong imagination, and she has many imaginary friends. Her best friend is a monster named Mary, and her fairy godmother is this sort of little leprechaun guy named Mr. Nuggy, who she calls on a banana when she needs him. And her evil nemesis is this witch named Mrs. Gobblecracker. And so she goes to school, and her sister and brother are like, just don't be yourself, you know, try to assimilate a little better. And she gets there, and there's this new girl who draws earrings on her self-portrait. So Dory's like, you're my best friend. And then when she tells, and the girl, whose name is Rosabelle, lives in a castle and has a dragon and she's a princess, you know. So obviously we're seeing as readers that she's the perfect friend for Dory, but then she goes home and tells her brother and sister about her new best friend. And they assume that this is an imaginary friend because she says she's extremely poofy and she doesn't have a lot of teeth and she wears a crown. So they're picturing this like puffy, fluffy monster with no teeth. And just the way the whole thing falls out is so great. And my favorite moment in it is when Dory's mom packs Dory's lunch and she puts the banana that she calls Mr. Nuggy on in her lunch. And Dory opens her lunch and is like, why did she pack my phone? I don't understand. And it's so, oh my gosh. The whole thing is just Abby Hanlon, who does the pictures too. It's heavily illustrated. I mean, man, I love this book so much. It's so funny. It's just ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. And there's definitely, you can say there's messages about being true to yourself and finding a friend and all that, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. It's just funny. It's so ridiculously funny. I don't care.
It's just funny.
I love that.
We are, I guess it makes sense in publishing, but I said we are sort of revolving around back to school books, aren't we? Carter, what's your next one though?
Oh gosh, this is so stressful. I feel like people need to understand that like paring a list down is like really like hard to do. But I'm going to go with The Little Gardener by Emily Hughes, which is published by Flying Eye Books. And Emily, I feel like really broke out with her book Wild, was it last year or the year before? And her pictures are incredible. And those are so easy to see, but her words are really beautiful too. And this is a story about a little gardener, literally, like he's little. And the book opens with this garden. You're kind of like the camera is low down in the dirt. And then it doesn't look like much. That's what the words say. This was the garden. It didn't look like much. And then you turn the page and it's even closer in. So you see the scale of this little guy. And the words say, but it meant everything to its gardener. And then the story just talks about his work in the garden, his failures in the garden, and some help he gets to make a really wonderful thing. And I think it's really profound what this book is saying about hope. And I love it. I feel like words I could say about it are no good.
Also, I feel like Emily's flowers are really pretty.
Yeah.
She's got so many pictures where she must have just pored over the detail. There's these great, you know, when the garden is sort of in shambles and has been neglected, she's got this great like pulling back image of the whole garden. You get the whole scope of it and you just see death and things weeping. And then to see it come back to life, it's beautiful. And it sort of feels like you're there. And I like that she took the time to bring us to that garden.
You know, I asked her about that. I interviewed her for my blog. So, you know, go there if you want to. And I asked her, you know, I thought that the girl in Wild and this gardener had some sensibilities in common, like just this like ragged hope that you don't really expect it to be there. And I asked her about that. And one thing that she said was where Wild was about acceptance and tolerance, and Gardner is about keeping hope alive at the time that she was struggling with her own. And the sentence that she said back to me, I put it on a post-it note and put it over my computer because she said, these are stories coming from a place of trying to understand rather than a place where it is understood. And I love that. I think that it's a lot of insight into the way she creates, but also the way we all experience stories.
Mm. Well, I'm going to bring back another story that was challenging to me and connect on that theme to keep that up. And that is a new graphic novel called Sunny Side Up by Jennifer Holm and Matthew Holm, the creators of Baby Mouse. And this is...
Who are they? I'm not sure about that.
No, you haven't heard of the Holmes? I don't know. Well, Jenny and Matt share this semi-autobiographical story. I haven't quite heard the entire story behind the story of this, other than I know that Colby Sharp and Travis Junker have been doing, through their podcast, The Yarn. They've been sort of interviewing everybody behind the book, which is great. I have yet to hear the final episode where Jenny talks about the book, though, and the connections. But suffice it to say, This is a story about a girl named Sunny who goes to spend the summer in Florida with her grandfather, and she thinks it's going to be full of trips to Disney World and miniature golf and fun things like that. And it turns out that she is definitely staying in a retirement community surrounded by elderly people. But she does make a friend there, and she does ultimately find comics and a connection and all that. But all the while she's there, these different things are causing her to flash back to her life at home. And we find out that Sunny's brother has been going through some substance abuse problems. And we see that not only through him being at the dinner table, for example, and being affected by these drugs, whether he's drunk or stoned or whatever. We don't go into we know that he's smoking, but we don't go into hard detail about what the, you know, narcotic or whatever was. But definitely the way that it caused him to act differently and affected the family dynamic and the family life. And I appreciate in the way this story is told, and obviously so much care has gone into it, but that again, it's perfect for that grade 3, 4, 5. It's not anything that I would ever question putting in front of a 3rd, 4th, or 5th grader. And yet it deals with a topic that I don't think anyone is putting in front of them, which is that substance abuse affects people we love. It affects people around us, and that it sometimes is really, really hard to understand, but that you need to know that it's not you and that that person can get help. And sometimes it's almost not even them. When there's this addiction, it sort of has this transformative ability to have it not be your brother anymore. I don't know. It's such a grown up book. It reminds me that my students are grown up. They're ready for stories like this, and that it's good that there are people like Jenny and Matt who are telling these stories so that they can experience them and have a more well-rounded set of experiences for how they approach the world.
I think that this book is so amazing, and it makes such a difficult, because it's a graphic novel, it makes a difficult topic accessible, both for students who also have somebody in their family who has a substance abuse problem, and for students who don't. And just, I mean, my 7-year-old, she's declaring this her favorite book right now. She loves it
right now.
Well, because it was, you know, it was drama, and then it was Smile, and then it was Sisters, and then it was El Defo, and then it was Roller Girl, and now it's Sunny Side Up. So you can see there's a definite trend there with books that Zuzu loves. But she's sort of the parts with the brother are maybe going over her head a little bit. She's in second grade, but I mean, she's getting what she needs to out of it.
That's okay, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I think she'll read it again in a year and be like, oh, and get more out of it. I also just want to say, is this the first podcast where you've said the words masturbation, stoned, and drunk all in the same podcast?
On narcotics? I'm sure it is, yeah.
And I said vomiting. So vomiting. You're going to have to mark this as explicit. These are curse words in my world.
Don't you think that speaks to the amazing work that's being made for kids right now? We've covered this really wide variety. Even Leo, yes. like the thought of being abandoned, you know, it's really
and being dead. I mean, the main character in Leo is dead.
And Julie, let's also not shy away from the fact that there was a point, I think, even when the three of us were growing up, well, maybe even the word didn't even exist to us, but the word transgender was a big no-no. You didn't talk about that kind of stuff.
It wasn't even a word. I mean, it certainly wasn't a word in my world.
But, and so all of this is a testament to to where publishing has come and the way we're able to engage our readers. And that's awesome.
We are so lucky to be involved in this community right now. I am so grateful that we are able to read books like this, both for if it's something that would directly affect the reader, but also if it's something you could just learn about other worlds and huge different new other worlds, but then realize that we're all people. We're all human people, and we have the same feelings. We just might have different experiences, which is something you sort of said before, Matthew.
Yeah. We're all human people. I love that. The universality of it. This happens. Speaking of things I've said before, we are out of time.
Ah! Okay. So can
so
also, we do our blitz? Julie, can we do our final blitz list?
I like that we're calling it the blitz list. Oh, my word.
Blitz.
Julie, please give us the blitz list. I can't even say it. The stuff that you don't want us to forget about.
Okay, Circus Mirandus by Cassie Beasley. You have to read that book. Unusual Chickens for the Exceptional Poultry Farmer by Kelly Jones, illustrated by Katie Kath, is amazing. It's an epistolary novel. I recommend it to everybody. Night Animals by Gianna Marino and I'm Trying to Live Spiders by Bethany Barton are two picture books that are nonfiction, but they are storybooks and they are hilarious and great. If you haven't read Templeton Gets His Wish by Greg Pizzoli yet, you have to read that.
I love
if you
that
haven't
book.
Read The Princess and the Pony by Kate Beaton, oh my gosh, that book is hilarious. My Cousin Momo by Zachariah O'Hara is brilliant. I Don't Like Koala by Sean Farrell with pictures by Charles Santoso is great. And my last one here, Ballet Cat and the Totally Secret Secret by Bob Shea. That's my blitz.
Oh, my word.
I love that.
That is an amazing blitz. That I didn't even realize, I guess, that Zachariah's new book was out. I've been seeing the illustrations of that for so long.
Oh, my gosh. It is so great and funny. It is really funny.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you've got to get it. I'm holding it up as though you can see it.
Good job, Zach. The artwork is really nice, Zachariah. Nice.
I'm going to say it again so you all hear it. My Cousin Momo. Go get it. It's so great. Okay.
Maybe the only illustration of someone in a cool tracksuit and a sweatpants.
I know the cover.
Yeah, man. They're like they play ping pong with acorns, and their cousin Momo, who's like a little bit not with them, and he keeps eating the acorns, and they're like, no, that's not. It's it's great.
Oh man. All right, Carter. Time for the blitz.
Okay, so Julie mentioned human people, but I think we also need to consider extraterrestrials. And I'm going to go with Your Alien by Tami Sauer and Goro Fujita, which is really, really a great, brilliant book. Swan, we didn't talk about, but
Swan. Yeah.
The Life and Dance of Anna Pavlova by Laurel Snyder and Julie Moore Sutton. Actually, funny thing about this book, I went to my favorite indie bookstore to buy a copy of it to mail to somebody, and I asked the guy if he had a copy of Swan, and he goes, oh, is that like a nonfiction book about animals, or is it like a different kind of book? And I thought that was like so wonderful. Like, I could have maybe gotten like, I don't know, something about the animal. They didn't. I got Swan. Beautiful.
Or Miss Swan is all I can think of.
There's a wordless book called Float by Daniel Miares, and
that's a really cool book.
It's a really, really, really cool book, so get your hands on that. I loved Ask Me by Bernard Weber, surprise, and Susie Lee.
Wait, Bernard Weber, the Lyle Crocodile guy?
Yeah. I don't know the story behind this book. I don't know its history, but it's a great look at like a father-daughter conversation. Yeah, really kind of cool. And then also, I want to mention two middle grade novels. One is Goodbye Stranger by Rebecca Stead, which is really groundbreaking in a lot of ways. If you work with young teenagers, or 12 and 13-year-olds, really stick this book in their hands. They will really love it. And also The Question of Miracles by Alana K. Arnold, which I'm not sure when that came out, in the spring, maybe summer. I might be pushing our timeline here, but definitely one to read in 2015.
Okay. Wow. A lot I haven't read yet. A lot, though, that's been on my radar for sure. That's great.
Yeah, our two read piles are going to grow.
And some of these books, we've had review copies for a while. So it's so exciting to know that they're out now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I've had some of the ones that I've been living with for a while that I'm excited to share. One Day, The End by Rebecca K. Dotlick is this crazy story where all of the page spreads just have like two sentences. One day I went to the store, the end. Or one day I went to the store and then I came home, the end. Like very, very short things. But it's reflective of the way children tell us stories, how they don't give us all of the details in between. So the illustrations in it by Fred Kohler do a ton of work, and it's outstanding. I've never seen a book like it before. I love it. I have I think this is either out or coming out probably by the time I share this, but Max the Brave by Ed Veer has been out for a year now in the UK, and it's coming out through Sourcebooks if it's not out yet. And I've been reading and reading and reading it over and over to kids. I've been sharing it for, again, like almost a year now, about this little cat who is brave, and so he's going to go find a mouse. He's going to chase himself a mouse. And every problem is he doesn't know what a mouse looks like. So he keeps asking these different animals. He comes across a fly. Are you a mouse? No, I'm fly, but I think mouse went this way. Comes across some birds and an elephant, and finally gets to mouse, and mouse says, oh, I'm not a mouse. I'm monster. I think mouse is sleeping over there, though. And the surprise twist ending is adorable, and I love how the background is just these like solid colors. It's very graphic and beautiful. Two chapter books that I've read and really loved, a graphic novel called The Last of the Sandwalkers by Jay Hostler, which is sort of, I don't know, it's sort of like an epic grown-up version of A Bug's Life. it's got these wonderful tie-ins to Jay Hostler is a biologist in addition to being a cartoonist. It's got these great tie-ins to facts, and so naturally sharing these facts, but it's got an incredible adventure of these beetles that leave their colony to go out and find if there's another place that they can build a new colony and sustain life because their colony is about to collapse. And there's some great sort of sci-fi twisting elements in there too. And the characters are really rich and deep and beautiful. And it's all black and white line art. Gorgeous to look at. And the final book I think I'm going to end on because it's ridiculous and I never knew that these books existed and now I'm obsessed with them is The 39 Story Treehouse by Andy Griffiths.
Oh, that's so great.
There's the 13 story, the 26 story, and now the newest is the 36 story treehouse. And they're heavily illustrated, sort of like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, only it's about these two boys that are the author and illustrator of the book. And they are charged by Mr. Big Nose, their publisher, to write a book. And in this case, they decide to they're trying to write this story in this massive treehouse that they have. And there's this villain. He becomes a villain who uninvents things. So they invent this story writing machine. It's called a once upon a time machine where it's going to tell these stories and write it for them. But something goes horribly wrong and they get locked out of the treehouse. So they have to find this guy that was a famous uninventor to uninvent the machine. And that just goes horribly wrong. And it was hilarious. And I was sharing it. My son had swim lessons over the summer. And so every time I was sitting with these other moms from swim lessons, I kept book talking things to them. And I ended up reading through all of these 39 story, all of these treehouse stories while I was in these swim lessons. And I just couldn't stop talking about them. So I loved that. I feel like it was something that I could enjoy right alongside my students. But then I realized I can read these to my five-year-old. And so he and I are reading this novel together. I love that I got to do that with him. It was cool. Hey, before we go, I should say, for those that haven't, and I'll put the links in the show notes for people that haven't met you, Julie, or you, Carter. Julie, you've got a book that you're now holding arcs for. That it's starting to come to life. Snapsy is coming to life.
It is. I know. It's really crazy. It is. It's very exciting. It's so cool. I can't tell you what it's like to receive a book you wrote in the mail, especially after a lifetime of like making a book called The Cat by Julie. I am six, and like stapling the side and doing four colors of crayons on the cover. And then to actually get this thing that's like Snapsy the Alligator by Julie. I'm 44, you know, that's it's amazing. It's amazing. And I've really been loving listening to The Yarn this week, Colby and Travis's podcast, because there's nothing that teaches you how many people go into the making of a book than actually having your book made. I mean, so many people are involved and all of them are so important.
And can I, up on the other, there's a point of view too here of I've known Julie since she first wrote Snapsy. And so I got to see it really early on and follow this process and read it too. And that has been such a new experience for me as a reader and as a friend to somebody. And it's awesome. You're going to love this book. Everyone is going to love this book.
Julie, remind
and
me.
Also, same thing with Carter, because Carter's middle grade comes out next year and I'm about to start reading it for the third time.
Oh,
and
cool.
Every time I read it, I love it even more. You, everybody, oh my gosh, you're going to love this book so much.
Matthew, we love books. We just love
books. I know, but I really love Carter's book more than all the others. So,
Julie, remind me again the full name of your book, the illustrator, and when does it release?
Okay. My book is Snapsy the Alligator Did Not Ask to Be in This Book.
Right.
It's illustrated by Tim Miller. It's coming out from Viking Children's Books on February 2nd, 2016.
Got it, February 2nd. Okay, Owen Carter, I know that, well, you know that I love your Design of the Picture Book blog. I think that's wonderful. And Carter and I, listeners, have a super secret project that we've been working on that we will share with you at some point with a bunch of our friends that we've been working on.
Secrets are the best thing.
Is the best.
I think you learn when you're a kid that they're not so great. But like now that we're adults and like they're really great.
It's fun. So in that way, Carter, I know what you've been working on also for some time. But I know that I actually was – I guess I didn't connect in my brain that you had this middle grade coming out before your picture book, before your Treehouse picture book.
Yeah,
so why don't you share a little bit about, again, title and publisher and a little bit about this middle grade.
Sure. It's called A Rambler Steals Home, and it should be coming out in the fall of 2016 from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And I spent this summer revising it. And the thing with books is that you work on them for so long in isolation. And now working on this with my editor has been such a – I've fallen in love with the story in a way that I didn't expect – which doesn't tell you anything about the book, but I'm sorry about that. But it's about a girl named Derby and the summer she spends with her father and her little brother living on a Rambler, a big RV trailer in the parking lot of a minor league baseball stadium. And so it's just a slice of her summer. She doesn't really have a place to land. So homesickness is a real thing that she is looking to sort of solve in her world without really knowing that that's what it is that she is. So
great. Well, we'll look forward to, I think next time we connect, Snapsy will be on the verge of publication. And then Carter, you'll also know more about dates and stuff moving forward. And that's going to be rad. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, and also we'll have a bunch more books to talk about.
We sure will.
Because they keep coming.
They keep coming. It's the greatest thing.
Well, thanks again for joining me today. I really am super happy.
Thanks for asking us, Matthew. I love having these conversations. So much fun.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.